Fables Around the Table is a role-playing game anthology podcast. This season, we're playing the Old Gods of Appalachia RPG, published by Monte Cook Games. It's based off the horror anthology podcast written by Steve Schell and Cam Collins. And that means this season may contain content not suitable for all audiences. So listener discretion is advised. Hey there, family. Let's get back into this. So, the ending of last episode, you all had seen a body ragdoll through the air, only to land at your feet as you have crested out of the basement of Jody's totally legitimate nightclub. And Korik, I think you spied something horrible. You spied something that could only be described as the River City Vampire. And I guess we'll get into that one in a second. But most pressingly, as I think Jody and Korik are at the top, you do have a man who has hit the ground very hard right in front of you. And you have another man, Big Troy, who is hopefully just unconscious, sort of in the rubble of the basement door behind you all. Everyone else who was in the bar is still downstairs. Willard has crept closer to who he has identified as the people most likely to protect him, i.e. the big strong women in the room. And I think that's where we're at. What's, I guess for Ernestine and Siobhan, what are you doing?
I don't think Siobhan has seen anything yet because she's still down at the bottom of the stairs.
That is true. You are, yes.
So, yeah. So she's just kind of like shouting up, what? And what is going on?
Ernestine is right behind Jody and Korik on the stairs. She has her camera out and she's currently trying to peek through both people, all the people, standing and not standing, trying to get a good look at what's outside.
I gotta look something up real quick because, I know personal cameras existed in 1928, but...
It's in the items.
Oh, no, I know it is. I'm trying to get a... I'm trying to get
a... big old clunky thing?
It'd probably, maybe something like a Kodak Brownie or a Brown Light or something like that. Mm-hmm. I think those would have been that old. Yeah. there were personal cameras at that time.
There's one that popped up, the Voigtlander Bergheil camera with a Hilar lens. I don't know shit about cameras, man. If you're out there and you're like, oh, well, actually, in 1928, the personal camera scene was extremely cool because they had... Shut up, please. I mean, no. I respect that. I'm sure you have a lot to tell me, but you're not here right now. And all I have in my mind is one of these goofy-ass little fucking accordion extendo cameras. So...
Well, actually, the Leica 35mm was used in 1928.
Whatever...
check this thing.
Whatever you all see in your head as the camera that Ernestine has right now is correct. Whatever makes you feel good in your heart meat, that's what Ernestine has got. But in any event, Ernestine has a perfectly reasonable personal camera for 1928 and is poking through our two other friends who have crested the top. Korik and Jody, I will tell you, I think Korik was the only one who clocked the monster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do me a solid. I don't think this game really has an equivalent of like a perception check or anything, because this is not, there are no dungeons, there are no dragons, this is not that deal. But what I would like you to do is to roll a difficulty 5 intelligence check, which means that you would need to get a 15 or better on the die. And if you get this, I'm going to give you some juicy information that will help you right now. And if you do not get it, then I won't.
Well, let's hope I get it. 17.
Son of a bitch.
Yes.
Bam.
Now, I will tell you, you did tell me that you were going to re-roll whatever the first roll was in your game, because you always know you can do worse. So, no, I'm kidding. I'm not going to make you do that.
Well, that did not happen on mic. No one has any proof I ever said that.
This is true.
I've heard nothing.
This is true. Okay. So, whatever this thing is, you know it in your heart to be the River City Vampire based off of some stories that you have put together. You know, this is... There's a bit of a boogeyman story about this, which I'm sure you would have gained from, you know, the rough and tumble folks you meet down sort of in the train yard and stuff like that. People who are living around in this area in places they perhaps should not be, because every once in a while somebody will go missing, and the people who often see these people in their last moments or come across their bodies all sort of describe the same thing, which is it's a creature about the size of a man, maybe a little bit bigger, very gaunt, skin hanging in rags, and just gray and unpleasant to look at. If they ever catch a glimpse at its teeth, you can see that they're broken. If it ever had hair, it certainly doesn't now. And it doesn't stick around for long. Usually, if someone has clocked it, it will disappear. And nobody ever really has a good handle on, like, what causes it to do things. Like, what its victims are or anything. But usually, aside from the fact that rumor has it that it lives in one of the mausoleums in the Hollywood Cemetery, the reason why it was given the name of Vampire is, of course, because it always attacks its victims by draining their life out from their neck. There's always bite marks on the neck. Not usually the, you know, the very fanciful pinpricks that you might have seen in a Dracula picture or something like that, but that is why they call it the Vampire.
Like, this is like, whereas like Dracula is sort, like you said, those two little pinpricks, this would be like a much more gruesome draining.
Yeah, and as opposed to it being like, oh, like, clearly someone got into a fight with a wild animal that has, like, bitten their neck or something, there's always, like, a deadening of the skin around it, like it has been drained, you know, sort of a loss of color, counterintuitive to where most of someone's blood should be, right? Like,
gotcha.
The skin has always gotten gray, not unlike the vampire itself. And as all of this flashes through your mind and you see this creature, you know that's what it is. You also see it leaving very quickly. Like, it locks eyes with you and disappears over the crest of a hill. You are pretty sure that based on its trajectory of where it is, it's probably heading down near the river, which could mean any number of things as to where it goes. But it is far enough that if you were to try and catch up with it, you would need to be extremely fast. And there are also a number of very other important things directly at your feet. So this is a point where you will need to make a choice. Do you want to be Van Helsing, or do you want to try and help these people who are in a lot of danger right in front of you?
I think I'm going to stay here after seeing the vampire and sort of locking eyes with it. And seeing it run away, I'm going to turn to Jody and ask of her immediately, are there any doctors here? And then, like, as I finish that, like, immediately start heading down the stairs and trying to get people to help me move the bodies, like, behind the bar or somewhere away from the door.
Yeah, I think for not to speak for Jody, but for Jody's clientele, the kind of people who are willing to go to a speakeasy in 1928 are probably at least a little used to some crime. Not everyone, certainly not Willard, dear sweet boy that Willard is. But you know, there's definitely some rough and tumble types down here that are understand the situation and are willing to come up and help you out. Jody, what do you have on your mind?
She is going to go down and see if any familiar faces are know any type of medical knowledge. Not even gonna look outside, but go straight downstairs. Point at someone, said, "You work at the hospital, right?"
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. For sure. I mean, I
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. I just do their paperwork, but yeah. No. No. That's great. And
close enough.
this random person has taken off their suit jacket and has rolled up their sleeves and is coming upstairs. However, there may be someone a little bit closer that has at least some kind of medical knowledge or some knowledge of healing. As the camera turns over to Ernestine,
who is still staring out the door now. I think you might have to pull her away from the door. Because, frankly, this is exactly what she came here for. So she is, at this point, she has exited the door. She is standing outside, trying to step over the bodies.
Oh my god. Ernestine!
Did you see it?
I
want to see it!
Get in here! You can see it later. Get in here now!
Oh. She'll allow herself to be pulled back inside.
All right. Yeah, Jody, this person that you've dragged up with you that works at the hospital, what is their name real quick?
Their name is, I'm going to say, Carlton.
Love it. And I'll give you an out on this one. We're going to say Carlton Shiflett.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Shiflett.
So Carlton comes up with you and gets, like, basically goes over to this body, and before he even, like, stoops down, he just looks you dead in the eye and is like, "Oh, you know he's dead, right?" And, like, you take a quicker look at this man, and I mean, it's full on, while this is maybe not a reference that all of you will get, this is very much Yamcha in the crater kind of death pose.
Gotcha.
Yeah, like this man was thrown through the air like a rag doll and has hit the ground, and like his limbs are going at angles they shouldn't be. While not a very gruesome sight, it's not great. He's like, we can move him, but like, shit, man, we got to do something about this. You can't have a dead cop here at your bar, man. That's
okay. You're not helping. Let's call now. Let's go help out Big Troy, and we'll worry about this body. Okay. Hey, Korek, if we could just pull this body back outside, that'd be great.
Yeah, I'll sort of like fireman carry like across my shoulders, sort of get him up there and carry him back to the top of the stairs, as close to sort of where he landed as I can.
Sure. I'm not even gonna make you roll for it. It's you're a big man, and he's not resisting in any way.
I have a question. With the enabler abilities, do you have to do anything for that, or is that just like a happening thing?
They are always on.
Anyway, Ernestine, in that vein of questioning, I guess, is looking at the body to see if his ghost is there.
You don't see a ghost that is like hanging around or anything. You do get the feeling probably that, I mean, it would be reasonable if this man has just died that his ghost would be around. You could use one of your powers to try and ask some questions.
You've created a conundrum. But I think she's going to, because she doesn't see a ghost immediately, she is going to attend to Big Troy first. as requested.
Sure.
And you'll have to walk me through the how to do the action abilities, because she would like to use Charmed Touch.
Yeah. So it'll give you like a point spend that you have to do it, which I...
Is that coming from the pool?
Yeah.
Okay. Charmed Touch, it is one intellect point. With a touch and a few chosen words, you restore 1d6 points to one stat pool of any creature. This ability is a difficulty 2 intellect task. Each time you attempt to heal the same creature, the task is hindered by an additional step. The difficulty returns to 2 after that creature rests for 10 hours.
Sure. While I imagine that this is sort of more intended for player character assistance.
Sure.
I'm going to say you can use Charm Touch, and as long as you can make the intellect roll, which I imagine you can, as long as you can do that, then realistically you will probably be able to get Big Troy back on his feet.
Cool. It is a 16.
You know, it turns out that is 10 more than you needed. so that's fine. What does this look like? What is Ernestine's Charmed Touch?
I have this all prepared out, but it's going to be really funny, because what she does is she puts a Band-Aid or a little like bandage on Big Troy's forehead, and she says, "Life, although it may be only an accumulation of anguish, is dear to me, and I will defend it."
Right on.
Which, she'll have you know if you asked her, is from Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Yeah, that tracks. Like, we should have seen this coming, right? Like, but yeah, no, you do this. Is there a flash of light or anything, or is it just
fully? I think it. She says the words and puts a Band-Aid on, and it looks like nothing happens, but he wakes up.
Yeah, as you finish saying what you do, Big Troy's eyes sort of flutter open, and let's see. I believe you all had sort of gotten him down to the bottom of the stairs at this point. Troy, you know how sometimes, like, as you are going to sleep, you will have one of those like full body spasms as like your body's trying to react to something as you're nodding off. Like, it kind of looks like that, where he jerks and you know, sort of sits up and looks around, clearly still in like fight or flight mode, and then realizes that he's downstairs and relaxes and just sort of takes a deep breath, and he's like, "Man, what the fuck was that?"
Does
Korik hear that?
Yes, I would say probably so.
After everyone else sort of like stammers and just doesn't have an answer, sort of keeping an eye out like up the stairwell, just very solemnly, "I think that was the vampire."
I think there is a beat, and then there is some laughter, and probably like one stuffy looking guy in the back is just like, "Oh, come on, you gotta, this is serious. You shouldn't, just, you know, that's very rude." But Big Troy looks at you and just like looks you dead in the eye and nods.
I'll like look back at Troy, like seeing this, and I'll immediately like look at the person who was like laughing and who spoke up, and with like this union brawler sort of physique and personality I have, just say like directly to him, like completely stone faced, "I've never seen a man do anything like that. No animal could do anything like that. Whatever killed that cop is well beyond anything you or I could ever understand."
I think when you say the words, "killed that cop," there is a sort of shudder among the crowd, and a sudden realization that they maybe have a better place to be right now. Everybody that isn't a cool named NPC is like, "Well, you know, we better just, you know, we better go now." And there's the clatter of people leaving coins on tables, and the sound of people swigging their last little shots, and then a bunch of people heading for the stairs and leaving.
Remember, all of you are not anywhere here.
You hear a couple of, I don't even know who you are, just as they leave. Yeah, no, at this point, Siobhan, your friend Serena looks at you and is like, you know, I think it might be time to go. I don't really feel safe. I'm so sorry for bringing you out here. Why don't we go and literally never talk about this again?
I think Siobhan will look over at Serena and say, I think you should go. I do, but I need... I don't know how to explain it, but I need to see this through. If that thing is connected to whatever happened to my dad, I think maybe I'll be safe with them, but you get home and I'll see you tomorrow at work. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. She looks a little bewildered, but she's like, yeah, that's fine. And, at this point, Willard looks over and pipes up. He's like, you know, if you need someone to walk you home, I can do that. And Serena's like, you know, sir, I think maybe you need someone to walk you home. maybe we'll keep each other safe. And they walk out together. And at this point, we have Big Troy, who is getting up. We have Annalise, who has been sort of set to collecting all of the money that people have left, who otherwise still seems a little shaken. And then there's you guys. And then a body.
Okay. Okay, well, we have a cop's body.
Well, the body got taken outside.
Yes. Yeah, I guess that's a great point. Where have you ditched that body outside?
I think I would have tried to put it like as close to where I found it, where it like it had first landed.
Sure. That is literally like right at the top of the stairs almost.
I'll move it off to the side a little bit. So it's not like directly in the way, but also like not in the basement.
That's fair. There is a little bit of a trail of blood as you do this. But, I mean, it is easy enough to pick this body up and scoot it around. Yeah.
Okay.
That's where you're at. What do we got?
Okay. All right. Alibis. That's what we need. No one was here. I was upstairs sleeping. Body got thrown to the house. I pulled him out and was like, oh, no, it's a cop. Help. Can we all agree with that?
Yeah, it could have been a shotgun blast that threw him back.
Yeah, I didn't see anything, honestly. I can honestly say I didn't see anything.
I'm very upset that I saw nothing.
That's okay. Okay, I don't know how to take that piece of information, bud.
Well, put a pin in that for a minute, Ernestine. We'll circle back to that. But I think that as far as what happened here, we didn't see anything, maybe a loud noise, a shotgun blast, or the body hitting the side of the building or hitting the ground or something. I think that covers our bases.
Yeah.
But also, what do we do about the broken door?
Huh.
Oh, yeah, it is smashed in.
That's a big problem.
If people show up to investigate, yeah.
So, all right, let's rewrite this a bit. We don't know what happened down here. We came down and found the cop, shipped through the door. Fuck, we also have the other door with that Big Troy went through.
Yeah, Big Troy, who is at this moment, you know, shaking it out, you know, still sort of strangely magically restored to vim and vigor, but boy, does he still hurt. So he's shaking it out and otherwise trying to help clean up and, you know, put the door back as best he can. But it is still very obviously cracked.
An attempted break-in.
Is the speakeasy in the basement of your business, Jody? This is an out of character question.
Oh, yeah. 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 It's definitely in the basement of the business.
Okay. So maybe we didn't know the speakeasy was there is not the best lie.
Well, I'm thinking maybe we can get a replacement door really quickly. And, well.
At 11 o'clock.
Okay. We're just going to clean out the speakeasy. I'm going to hide everything possible. Make it look like a normal basement.
Have people started like congregating in the street? Did like other people around hear this happen?
Well, so yes and no. An interesting point is that Jody had paid some local kids to go cause some havoc if any cops started coming around. That said, like, there are probably one or two houses nearby that, you know, you see a candle at the window sort of go out. But I don't think there's anyone else in the street at the moment. Mm-hmm. I think you might far off hear, you know, the sounds of a firecracker or something as a just in case sort of measure. But I don't think there's anyone else on the street with you guys.
So one of Korik's areas of knowledge is laws. Would, and absolutely feel free to shoot this down, could that also apply to knowing how to evade the law and law enforcement?
I mean, look, things aren't illegal unless you get caught, right? Like, you gotta know what that line is. So, you know what? Sure, I'll give you that one.
Korik's idea is we have to get this body out of here.
Okay, just fully remove it. Yep. I love that idea.
Okay. The little bit of thrill seeker in Korik, his idea is to take this body, sticking to the alleyways, and start heading down toward the docks where the vampire was headed.
Yeah, that's a thought.
To try and dump it in the river. How far away would that be?
It depends on how quickly you want to end up in the river. I guess...
Well, I have a +4 to speed, so does that change the math?
No, it's more of a, like... Yeah, you could probably, like, pitch it over a cliff or something. I say a cliff. It's not like you're super high up. But, you know, you could sort of pitch it over the bank and have him tumble down there. If you want, like, a safer way for you to, like, get down to the bank to, like, push him off to sea, so to speak, that might take a couple of minutes to get down. But, you know, if nobody's out there right now, you could probably, I would say it would be a very easy check to get the body over, just to like pitch it over the side, to have it like go down a hill and down to the bank. I would say it would be a slightly harder check to take it physically down to the banks itself and chuck him in the James River.
Is this the body of the deputy?
Yeah.
I think I gotta take it to the river. I mean, just if we chuck it over the side of the cliff, like someone could very easily do the math of, hey, it came from up there, and then trace that back to where we are currently. So I'm thinking river.
I mean, I'll go with you. If Victor and Elise, if you can just clear out the speakeasy as if it was never here, take your time, Victor.
Yeah, I think they both look at you and... they both just give you kind of a stern nod, and I think for situations such as this, you've probably given them both maybe like a key to your kitchen or something, so that you can get stuff upstairs. Your dad, not that he will help, but your dad is aware that this is a possibility, so you can imagine there's probably going to be a bit where he comes downstairs to be like, who's poking around in my house, and then they have a whole thing and explain it. But that is a problem for future you, and as you ask Big Troy and Annalise to deal with it, they set about to getting it done. And thankfully, a lot of the stuff that you've used as chairs and things like that, you know, turns out pretty normal things to have in a basement if they're just, you know, extra things for your house. So, you know, they start setting stuff up and putting putting cloths on top of things. And but yeah, so they've set to do that. The rest of you, so you are planning on taking the body down to the river. Is that right?
That's Korik's plan.
Yes.
Okay.
I think Siobhan pulls Ernestine to the side while they're doing whatever body stuff is going on and says, What do you know about whatever that was?
How long do you have?
Until they get back from dumping this body, I suppose.
Oh, I'm not staying here.
Well, then... I just...
Do you want to go outside and look for it? Because I would like to look for it. At least we can stand lookout.
I think that's not a terrible idea. Yeah, let's do that. That is... And she grabs Ernestine by the shoulders. I imagine Ernestine is already, like, moving off and goes, but we're not actually going to get in a fight with that thing, right? You don't want to actually, like, deal with it. You just want to see where it went. Right?
Right.
The silence speaks volumes.
Somehow I think I'm getting myself into trouble, but let's go.
It could be worse. We could all be dead.
That is a true statement, yes.
Sorry.
I think Siobhan just doesn't know how to deal with this. Like, what is this girl?
This is where I'm just like, remember Ernestine didn't spend a yeah. lot of time around mm-hmm. other people. And most of the people she talks to are dead.
Well, hey there, family. It's time for the mid-roll. And a special hello to anyone here from the Old Gods of Appalachia Fellowship Hall on Facebook and Discord. I'm going to knock this out pretty quick so we can get you back to the episode. But, you know, thank you for stopping by. Really appreciate that. It seems like a lot of you were really happy to see this happen. So I hope that I am giving you your money's worth, which is to say, it's free. I hope you like it. Now, real quick, just on the Project Derailed side of things, here's a reminder that the Crit Award nominations go live at the beginning of April. So if you like any of the shows we make here at Project Derailed, it sure would be swell if you told those nice folks about us. You can find out more at critawards.org. Also, Project Derailed has a Patreon. This show isn't funded by it, but subscribing does get you access to a monthly talk show where folks will sit around and chat about the various things going on in the nerd world, as well as the goings-on of the most cursed of states, Ohio. You can find that link in our show notes. Also, shout out to our editor, Chelsea. Chelsea is the co-owner of Plot Kindling Candles, which is a candle business dedicated to turning your tabletop characters into their own scented candles, which is fun. This isn't like, you know, a 4D medium here, but you could theoretically go commission some candles based on the characters in this show, and then you could have that as your own experience, and like, no one could take that from you. You can find them at etsy.com/shop/plotkindlingcandles to start the process of designing your own custom character candle today. Special thanks once again to Steve Shell and Cam Collins. Aside from giving their dark blessings to us for this show, they've also graciously allowed us to use the ambient spooky background music that they wrote for the Old Gods of Appalachia podcast that they put up on Bandcamp a while back. We will also have a link to that in the description of this episode. Speaking of music, the theme song for this season is an old standard known as This Train is Bound for Glory. It's been performed by just about every country musician who's ever picked up a guitar, but we're using the earliest recorded version of this song performed by the Florida Normal and Industrial Institute Quartet in 1922. On a somber note for a sec, if you haven't heard, the area around Lost River State Park in West Virginia has been burning due to a wildfire. By the time you're listening to this, the National Guard should have already done a controlled burn to prevent the remnants of the fire from going any further, but the local volunteer fire departments out in the area have been working on getting this blaze down for days. Now, as far as I can tell, the only donation drive that had been set up by the fire department out there, they've already closed it. They said thanks. They've gotten everything that they need. There's been a huge outpouring of support. But if anything else opens up, I will be sure to let people know here. If you ever get the chance to drive out that way and just into the Shenandoah Valley and beyond in general, I highly recommend you do so. I lived out that way for a long time. It's really pretty. And things like this are a good reminder that the beauty of nature is vast but impermanent. And what's here today may not be here tomorrow. So hey, on that happy note, I'd like to tell you about our cast. Ernestine is played by Caitlin Camp. This is Caitlin's sixth season of Fables, and while she doesn't have anything to promote right now, she does want you to know that it is always a good time to pick up trash in your neighborhood. Josh Medora plays Corrick Ford Culberson. This is Josh's second Fable season with us. We're glad to have him back. Josh also has nothing special to promote right now, but would like to remind everyone that anything you can do to make someone's life a little bit easier counts, no matter how small it is. Maeve Fox plays Siobhan. This is Maeve's second Fable season as well, but you can also catch her on our Masks actual play show, Cape Chronicles, and at Foxtail Games Pod, that's T-A-L-E, over on the site that used to be known as Twitter. And finally, our new friend Deka plays Jody Carlton. You can find both Deka and Maeve playing Brindlewood Bay over with their group Third Floor Wars, which you can find on Twitch, YouTube, the husk of the site formerly known as Twitter, or by going to thirdfloorwars.com. And of course, finally, I am, and at least until I find the Witchwood Hexed Me, will continue to be Adam Seitz. I started on Fables last season, and, you know, I'm just happy to be here. I was the co-creator of the D&D adventure One Night Strahd. I've got a couple of things coming up this year, sooner rather than later. I keep forgetting to do that. Maybe I should go write that now. Anyway, if you want to keep up on what I'm doing, you can check out my website at iknowadamseitz.biz. All right, I think that'll about do it for this one. So, until next time, see you soon, family. See you real soon. To that end, if you're all heading up out of the basement to take lookout, I think you both get up. At this point, Jody and Corrick have sort of slung the body fireman carry style. I will say it is bloody work. Like, this man has bones in places they should not be. And Corrick probably could not help himself from checking. There is a pretty ugly looking bite on this guy's neck. So he is a leaky juice bag, so to speak, but
ew.
But I will say it is a pretty easy thing for you both to pick him up. As we see Corrick and Jody heading off down the path to get down to the river, we see Ernestine sort of looking around and looking to the puddle of blood, and I think probably Siobhan is saying something, and we sort of hear Siobhan's voice go mute as Ernestine has focused on this blood puddle, and from this puddle a body starts to form, and you get the feeling this is probably the spirit of this man that you were looking for before. I'm gonna say, well, actually no, you tell me how much experience does Ernestine have with the newly deceased?
The newly violently deceased, not much. Old people dying in their sleep, yes. So this one's a little bit different for her.
Sure. I would say you have the feeling that this spirit, if you wanted to use one of your powers to talk to it, you could probably do that and sort of solidify it for a minute, but more likely than not, like, this is not a spirit that is going to be haunting this place in a traditional sense, especially because its body still exists, so to speak. So I would say if you want to ask questions, this is probably the time to do it, or else the spirit may pass on, and you may still be able to get something out of him if you do a Ouija board sort of situation. But while the iron is hot, so to speak, now is the time to do it.
I think she would take the opportunity to question him.
Okay. Then why don't you read me the ability that you have that does that?
So this is question the spirits, 2 intellect points. You call a spirit to you and petition it to answer a few questions, usually no more than 3, before the spirit fades.
I will say we do love a good rule of 3. So yeah, we're going to say you, as you spend your mental power to sort of help this spirit manifest. I mean, you do see that. I mean, it's there. It looks like the guy as much as you've ever seen Deputy Derby, which is probably not a whole lot, but you know, there is at least a rough approximation of this man rendered in blood. The best way I could put it is almost like a low poly rendering, like as though a PlayStation 1 graphic was rendered in real life of this man. But what do you want to ask him?
I'm willing to take brainstorming opportunities for this as well, but let's see. This is terrible. I've gotten, where did you come from? Where did you go? Just, inexplicably popping up in my brain because that's what I'm thinking about asking about. She would ask him, where were you and what were you doing when the vampire approached you?
Now, does Siobhan see any of this, or just...
We'll get to what Siobhan sees in okay. just a second.
No, no.
You see the spirit of Deputy Derby look at you, and very, very wetly say, I was following up on a murder from last night over at the new theater. And when I made my way over here, it found me. That's one. Maybe 1.5. We'll see.
I think Ernestine will like give Siobhan like a side eye and say, if you had any questions to ask his ghost, now would be a good time to let me know, and like gesture at the blood puddle.
Yeah, so what Siobhan has seen is, as you were talking to Ernestine, presumably about, you know, what to keep an eye out for, what your plans were, you saw Ernestine's eyes roll in the back of her head and just sort of stop and pivot towards the blood puddle and just sort of jerkily kind of walk closer towards it. And then you heard her speak. And then as she asks you that question, she looks right at you, but like looks completely normal. Like her eyes have returned to where they were, looks at you as though you've been there the whole time and that everything's completely normal. But Siobhan has not seen anything other than Ernestine having a weird spasm.
I think she's just going to look at Ernestine and go, I was going to ask what the hell that was, but let's move past that. Just pretend like that didn't happen. Where are we going?
We're not... I still have more questions to ask this man, so I'm staying right here. Not the best at question asking.
Oh, that's a real shame.
It is a real shame. shoot. Out of character, I would like help because I'm like, oh no. Oh.
Yeah, I'll allow it.
Caitlin needs assistance. What do we want to know? Where did he come from? Where did he go?
Because I'm trying to think of like ways to not F this up.
I think asking what happened at the theater.
Okay.
Because he said something happened at the theater, so I think asking what happened at the theater is maybe the best next question.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then I guess she'll like kind of shrug at Siobhan and turn back to the ghost and ask, what happened with the murder at the theater?
He will... It's the best way he can answer this.
If he looks like he's hesitating, I think she'll remind him that he's dead and any sort of confidentiality doesn't matter anymore.
Now, he looks at you and says, I found a body at the theater last night that had been bitten and drained. And I had been consulting the police archives on anything that might have lined up with that. And all I had heard was that there was some kind of file about murders like this over the last couple of years that I'd never seen before. And when I tried following up on it, I got here.
Hmm.
I think that's what he gives you for that one.
Hmm.
Okay. Let me think of how to phrase this next thing. When the vampire found you, what happened immediately preceding that interaction? In that, like, did you see it?
Okay. Let me consult one of those maps that I had left.
Maps.
So he says to you, I had been following a string of murders or a line, trying to plot a line to see how they lined up. And I had just come up from the riverbank over by Belle Isle. And that was when I saw it. It came right up out of the river at me. And I ran. And I got up here. And that was it. And I think with that, like, he sort of points, unfortunately, roughly in the direction that your friends have been taking his body, which roughly from where you all are is sort of down towards the riverbank, towards one of the larger islands that are in the middle of the river called Belle Isle. And then he collapses, or the blood collapses, I guess, back into the puddle. Again, Siobhan has seen none of this. The most that Siobhan has seen is as Ernestine has gone back and sort of looked directly at the blood puddle, her eyes have rolled back in her head as she asks these questions. And then just sort of, quote-unquote, stares into the middle distance until it stops. And then she sort of also, like, gives a shake. And then, at the same time that the blood puddle drops for her, she shakes and then shakes her head, and her eyes are no longer rolled back.
Hmm. Well, we should probably stop them from going directly into where the vampire came out of the river, shouldn't we? And I think she's just going to march right off into that direction.
I think Siobhan will have a moment of, like, just kind of staring after her, like, and then shakes her head and follows without asking any questions, just befuddled.
So while that happens, to our other friends, Jody and Quirik, as you are carrying this man, I would love a roll out of you that, do either of you have any sort of stealth related abilities?
I absolutely do.
I do, but in a bad way.
Great.
what?
Let's go for maybe in the good way. What does Jody have?
I just have stealth.
Oh, great. Cool. Just do me a favor and roll me like a difficulty 4 stealth, which means that are you trained in it or specialized?
I am trained in it.
Okay, I think that means you make that one easier, so that makes that difficulty 3. So you need at least a 9 on your die.
16.
What is with you people rolling 16?
It's our magic number, damn it!
It's the magic number.
What fuck, man?
You're gonna have to turn this into like the Dark Tower series, where is it 13 that always pops up in that one?
Oh yeah,
that's it's our 16 is our 13.
I'm switching the theme song of this season from this train over to 16 tons. But no. Okay. You are fairly able to go through, and any houses that still have their lights on, mm-hmm. or whatever, and I mean nobody's really got their lights on, but like any of them that have like candles in the windows, or you know, somebody out for a middle of the evening casual sitting on the porch and drinking a sweet tea, which sounds like I'm stereotyping us Southerners, but I promise you is a thing that we actually do. That's not just in the movies. Like sometimes nothing beats just a good old sit on the porch and chugging some tea that's sweet enough to give you diabetes. But anyway, yes. as people are you know, out here just a little bit, you're able to sort of skirt around anywhere and stay out of any sort of eye lines that might be a problem. And you make it down, and there's a footpath that takes you sort of down to the river. Again, the James River is set up in such a way that there are a number of islands sort of just out in the middle of it. It's a pretty stony river, I guess, is a weird way to put it. Like, there are a lot of islands that are just basically like, oh yeah, there's some of this rock that is tall enough that it is no longer in the water. And, you know, especially if the river is low, if there hasn't been a lot of rain or anything, mm-hmm. like, you know, there's a lot of these sort of like stony outcroppings. But one of the bigger ones is Belle Isle, which is, like I say, sort of just a nice, big, grassy island. I think at this point in time, there's probably not much on it, if anything. But you see Belle Isle sort of out of the corner of your eye as you make your way down. And as you get towards the river, I think probably you hear, like, as you've been carrying this man's body, there's been just sort of a jingling going on. And you realize it's this man's keys. Like he's got a big fat key ring, which is up for you to take if you'd like it.
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and take the key ring.
I think as you pull the keys out of his pocket, his wallet also falls out. And I think not that there's a whole lot of light here right now, but I think the moon's probably out, so you've got a little bit of visibility. Mm-hmm. And you can see there's like a picture of him and his wife in one of the pockets. There's, you know, a couple of dollar bills that are in there, which again, in 1928, like, that's, you know, having a couple bucks in your pocket's always a good idea. And I think you see there is a matchbook that falls out, which is a little weird because you don't smell tobacco on him. Like,
okay,
there's, God knows everybody in this town fucking smokes. Like, this is a, especially because we make tobacco here, right? Like, River City is a very tobacco forward place. Fucking everyone smokes. And the fact that he has a matchbook, I mean, I don't know, could just be that he's very courteous, but there is one that falls out.
I'll take the matchbook, and I want to see, like, where is it from?
Yeah.
Like, what establishment?
Yeah, it's got a stamp of Pleasant's Hardware on it. Like, it looks like he probably just bought a pack of matches from the hardware store, which is a reasonable thing to have done. But you do see, because of course there is a little bit of a note scratched on the inside of it in pen. It says file 1601 CHT, and that's it.
All right, file 1601 CHT. So I'm gonna take the matchbook. I'm gonna take the money out the wallet, put the wallet back in his pocket, and take the key ring.
Sure.
I feel super bad as I'm doing this, but it doesn't stop me.
Look, man, money spends. Right?
It's the thought that counts.
He doesn't need it.
No.
Korik has his horrible sneaking ability as well. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. What is your horrible sneaking ability?
So I have in my skills list sneak / stay quiet hindered and the inability tab checked.
Why are you like this?
Because I am a big fighter man, not particularly interested in being quiet.
God damn it.
Okay. I think this is how this plays out then. You two make your way down to the riverbank. And do you just want to just 1-2 huh, and just chuck him in the river? Or do you have any other plan?
I think that works.
Yeah. Huh.
All right. Yeah, you do. I mean, he's a pretty average-sized guy, so it's a little tough to just fucking shot put him. But but I mean, between the two of you, yeah, you chuck him out a little bit, and far enough out, I think that the current in the river catches him, and you know, he starts his way out. Certainly not the first body that's ended up in that river. Certainly not the last, but. Maybe the first one that either of you have put there.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, a fun little emotional journey to go on later.
That's debatable for Korak.
You know, that's true.
He has a friend at the cemetery whose job is just to help him, quote unquote, get rid of things.
Yeah, I mean, but you know how many people own pig farms around here? Like,
that's fair.
You know.
The river's a new one. We'll add river to the list of places I've gotten rid of bodies.
Fair. I will say, as you all are making your way back up, Korak, you step on kind of a loose rock, and you sort of slip and tumble for a second, and... There's sort of a loud noise as, like, some of the other, like, loose rocks and scree sort of tumble down for a second. And, like, you're fine. Like, you don't take any damage. You're not hurt or anything. But, like, you made a lot of noise as you did that. And, you know, the two of you sort of scramble to get up and get out of here. But what I will say is that I think you all will be able to get back to the basement / Jody's place pretty easy. But Korak, like, you look like you murdered a man. Like, you are covered in blood and mud and smell like the river. Like, you, if you go somewhere like this, you will not be able to hide. Somebody is going to call the cops on you.
You can clean up at my place, take some of my father's clothes. It's fine.
That is greatly, deeply appreciated, Jody.
I think as you finish making your way back, maybe this is the time where Ernestine and Siobhan have been like, yeah, we should go get them. And like, you see Jody sort of just crest over the hill and it's fine. And then you see just a bloody, muddy mess right up after. And you do sort of a jump, like a jump scare take for a second. Then you realize that's just Korak. But I think it will probably take a little while more for Big Tony, or sorry, Big Troy and Annalise to finish moving everything. And I think you all will have sort of a moment to catch your breaths together and make a plan for what's happening next. That's where we're going to temporarily leave our characters to jump into a little bit of housekeeping that we sort of missed last time. And so we're going to cram it all in right here, and then hopefully it'll be a lot less crammed in next time. So let's talk about experience points, because this is a system that loves for you to have experience points. And I am someone who usually uses milestone leveling in my Dungeons & Dragons games, which means I forget about experience points all the time, which is bad. So first and foremost, our first episode, you all spent sort of a lot of time setting up character moments. Some of you did some cool stuff just in general to sort of move the plot along. So I would like to make sure that each of you have 2 experience points for that episode. So everybody just mark down +2 experience points. Now, in longer games of this, the Old Gods rulebook encourages us to have character arc ideas to sort of like help guide characters and make sure they're sort of staying, you know, on character and things, and to help sort of reward everyone for being in character. So my question to you, and I suppose I will go down the line after someone volunteers to go first, for all of you, what is like one burning goal that like your character, like this is top on their mind, not for what has just happened, but like in general, driving, motivating factor. What is the one thing that you are trying to get done as you have made your way back into River City?
I can go first.
Sure. And I'm going to take notes because we're a competent group that takes notes exactly. about things.
And we're not going to lose our notes this time and spend exactly. an hour looking for them next session.
That never happened, and it's not recorded, and no, you can't prove it in court.
That's fair. Okay. I see Jody, and for her character arc is being established. So she wants to get potentially a political seat, whether it's through underhanded means or non-underhanded means. See, she wants a political seat and real, like, be able to do something important for her community as well.
All right. I think that one's good. Who else has one?
I have one.
Yeah.
I think the thing that they had called it in the character arcs thing was creation. And as I think has already come up in game, Ernestine would like to write an article or a long form story about the River City Vampire. And that's why she came to River City in the first place. She wants to have that published.
Excellent. How about the rest of you twos?
I think Siobhan wants to... I think she feels a little bit of guilt that she wasn't there when her father died. And she is kind of looking to come to some sort of closure about that. And this weird, like, knowing that this, you know, knowing from the conversation last time that there could be a connection here to this... whatever is going on now is driving her to stick with it and find out what's going on.
Right on. How about for Korik?
Yeah, so I think for Korik, this might be a little abstract, and I'm happy to help sort of hone in on something here. But I think that, like, overall, Korik is just, like, tired of running from town to town, tired of always being in trouble with the law, tired of sort of being... the muscle, but that's all he's ever known and done, and I think he's just trying to figure out who he is and how he can be useful when the only thing he's ever been good at and useful for is being that muscle.
Okay, this is good. I think with those established, the rules say that if someone gets closer or, like, actively does things to help achieve those goals, they should get experience points for acting in character and doing that. But I will say that, broadly, everyone here has done something, intentionally or not, that also falls in line with those goals. So, everybody, mark one more experience point for that.
Yay.
I have seen in some other games, some other actual plays, sort of a thing at the end where people will be like, you know, I think this person had the coolest moment today. Like, you know, we would like to award that player one experience. How do you all feel about something like that?
I love that.
Yeah, I think that'd be cool.
No, I'm okay with that.
Cool. I was really hoping you'll be like, no, fuck that. Fuck my friends. Nobody gets shit. No.
I don't want to talk about how cool my friends are.
Yeah. That's fine. Collectively, then, well, we can do that for going forward. I didn't really give you all a whole lot of chance to do much this episode. So while I had maybe a little bit more hand in where we went than I would like to in future episodes, I will say that both Jody and Ernestine picked up on the plot coupons that I handed out. So I would like to hand each of you one more experience point. And I think that's it for me for this episode for those. Then I think that's where we're going to call it for today.
Hey, that sounds good.
Cool. Talk to you soon, family. Talk to you real soon.
Why do you want to be a hero?
Yeah, she's gonna sort of like drop down out of the sky and try to kick him, like, you know, square in the chest.
Look, I don't know what you're fucking trying to do here, but I don't make deals with enemies who put grenades in a box like they're the $5 movie bin.
Release Mystery, or you all will be the ones that are extinct.
I don't know if I can have an honest conversation with Royale as a corgi.
You're right, it's fucking not funny.
I mean, literally no one would find this funny.
Remix, use the dragon filter, that would make it funny.
It's just like man standing emoji.
Just T-posing in the corner.
Who is your contact?
Benchmark.
Who?
Hey, I just need Buzz Nest for like 1 minute, and then you guys can go back to whatever you were doing.
Check out Season 2 of Cape Chronicles starting Wednesday, October 5th, every first and third Wednesday, wherever you get your podcasts.
File folders contain important information.
Hey, I'm Saker.
And I'm Evan.
And our podcast is It's All Been Done, a Bare Naked Ladies podcast. Hey, what's that podcast about, Ev?
So, do you know of a band called Bare Naked Ladies?
1 week.
Yeah, that's one of them.
Okay, all right, cool. Yeah, I know of them.
Did you ever want to learn more about them? Or...
Absolutely not.
Okay, well, then this is the podcast for you, because we teach you nothing with various guests.
Yeah, like Matt Besser. Holy shit.
We climbed in a second-story window and partied in this house where we barely... didn't know at all the people. That was crazy.
Holy fuck, Mike Mitchell.
Well, I don't know how much you guys really do love Bare Naked Ladies.
Justin McElroy. Grab your tongue, and I want you to say born on a pirate ship.
Born on a pirate ship.
You were born on a pile of shit, and many more. So check it out. But also, if you don't like Bare Naked Ladies, we talk about them probably like a third of the time. So.
Yes.
That's every Tuesday, wherever fine podcasts are sold.
We could make a board game about it.
Back on Toril, I was a nobody. I got teleported out here, and here I'm something. I'm somebody.
The Voidfarer begins maneuvering towards this 200-meter-long space whale.
To handle one of these, you need grit. Is that something you have?
I'm a tiny little guy. Of course I got grit.
If you tried anything, it would end very poorly for you.
This illithid dreadnought warps away, accelerating the spell jamming speed as quickly as they arrive.
Who the fuck?
What am I trying to say here, Ravnus?
That we're crew.
I like that. We're crew.
That is a natural one.
You send yourself sailing out the side of the ship, untethered.
Oh.
I'm putting a python into the ground, I'm wrapping my rope around it, and I'm jumping into the gravity well.
No.
A gnome, a halfling, and a half-orc walk into a bar. I forget the middle part, but the punchline is feathers everywhere, and that's not my peanut butter. I cast Tasha's Hideous Laughter.
Climb aboard for Tales of the Voidfarer, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Oh, my consequences have actions. Wait.
ProjectDerailed.com